There's a constant tension between the beauty of our landscape and the economic value that lies in or under it. One person's pristine and pretty stream is another person's potential source of valuable minerals. So it is with some streams in southwest Oregon. A mining company wants to perform some exploratory tests near the streams. Environmental groups not only do not like the idea, they want the streams withdrawn from the possibility of mining. The groups include the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center, or KS Wild. Morgan Lindsay is one of the people from that group and our guest here in the studio on The Exchange. Morgan, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the general issue here. There are streams, it looks like, in several different parts of the region, on different parts of the southwest corner of Oregon.
Sure. When you think about southwest Oregon, there are three iconic rivers that come to mind. The North Fork Smith River, which flows down into California, one of the only free-flowing rivers remaining in this part of the world. The Illinois River, which is well-beloved to residents of southern Oregon, and the Chetco River. And all three headwaters are threatened by the proposed nickel mining proposal.
It is just nickel they're looking for? No other minerals?
There's a few minerals. Nickel laterite is one of the primary ones.
And so who's doing the exploration?
There is a mining company called the Red Flat Nickel Corporation. They're actually not a U.S. company. They're British, and they own over 5,000 acres of mineral rights, both in several different areas affecting those three rivers and also including the Hunter and Pistol rivers, which are smaller coastal rivers.
And so, at this point, is it just exploratory? They're not actually doing any mining at this point, right?
So in the mining process, before you can sort of go ahead with a full-scale open pit mine, you have to do some exploration first. So that's the proposal that is before the Forest Service and the BLM. Both kinds of lands are involved. And there's a lot of local residents, county commissioners, who are very concerned about this proposal, not only because it would affect drinking water, but also the livelihood of the region, especially the North Fork Smith River. You look at the towns of Hiuchi and Gaski all the way down to Crescent City. They depend on the North Fork Smith not only for their drinking water, but also for their livelihood, salmon, steelhead, and recreation.
I guess I'm a little surprised to hear that the idea of mining nickel has gained strength again, because I know there was a major nickel mine in southern Douglas County that closed years ago because the world prices for nickel were so bad.
Absolutely, and that's what you see. The mining industry really is a boom and bust economy. So this was a really big issue in 1990, and at that time, the Smith River Recreation Area just across the border in California was withdrawn from the 1872 mining law, and that really has protected that whole area. Now what we're seeing is just across the border in Oregon, these other mining claims, now the price of nickel goes back up, and all of a sudden there's renewed interest in developing this area that once, had been thought to be pretty safe.
Particularly with the North Fork Smith River, then, it is not protected on the Oregon side. It has not been withdrawn the same way it has on the south
side. Exactly. And you look at some of these laws, the 1872 mining law was signed by President Ulysses S. Grant back when women had yet to gain the right to vote. So we're looking at a law that doesn't give very much protection at all for communities, for local residents, and really gives all the benefit of the doubt to the mining company.
Wow.
They pay no royalties. It's really an extreme case.
The 1872 mining law seems to be one of the most resistant around the country. I mean, it's the one of the hardest laws to change. I mean, why do you suppose that is?
I give a lot of credit to our local elected officials, Senator Ron Wyden, Jeff Merkley, and especially Representative DeFazio have all been very strong advocates of some common sense reforms. But unfortunately, once you start to do that, I would say it's like a lot of issues that we see. If there's very strong, corporate support, it's difficult to make the change without a majority of votes in Congress.
The whole mechanism itself is a little difficult, I think, for people to follow because it runs rather counter to our current concepts of laying claim to things and land ownership and that sort of thing. So how does the 1872 mining law work? I mean, yeah, you go in and you stake a claim on public land.
Sure. It's what they call, it's you know, we're all familiar with private property rights. So you own your house, you own the land. But this is, we're seeing this with a lot of other issues, is often there's the surface right to just, you know, you'd say, you know, your yard and the land that the house is on. But then there are subsurface mineral rights, which can be bought and sold separately, similar in the West to how we do water rights. So you may own the land, but then the water rights are a separate right to that natural resource.
So you could essentially sell mineral rights under your house in some circumstances?
And in a lot of cases, people will buy a property not necessarily realizing whether or not they do own the subsurface mineral rights.
Hmm.
In the fracking issue in, you know, the Colorado Rockies, that's a big issue for people. But here, what we're talking about is, you know, it's public land. So it's land that belongs to all Americans. So it's as if our collective, you know, house has these subsurface mineral rights that are now, you know, this mining company wants to develop them. And it's really, I just have to say how worthy this area is for protection. I don't know if you've had a chance to go and float the North Fork Smith or go swimming in the Illinois River, but it really is one of the botanical hotspots of the world. In Senator Wyden's recent legislation, he's proposed it for protection. This is an area that is long past due. Salmon and steelhead, it really takes the breath away.
You came in here with some maps, and I'm looking at particularly the North Fork Smith River, which runs right along the western, southwestern edge of the Kalmiopsis Wilderness Area. I have to assume within the wilderness area it is protected.
There are some protections within wilderness, but however, wilderness does not necessarily take away the mineral right.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So the 1872 mining law can even trump the wilderness
can trump wilderness, absolutely.
All right. We're talking to Morgan Lindsay on the Jefferson Exchange. She's from the group KS Wild, the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center. We're talking about proposals for nickel mining on several streams in southwestern Oregon. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your comments or questions. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So is the area that is being proposed along the North Fork Smith, first of all, how close is any of this activity to the actual streams?
That's a great question, and I think that's a lot of concern that people have, is that we really don't know very much about this proposal. That's, again, one of the strengths of the 1872 mining law, is that we don't know very much aside from, you know, very preliminary ideas about where the mining company wants to begin to explore. Once they do, you know, establish a claim to a mineral, that makes it much, much more difficult to try to affect their plans in terms of where they can mine and what kind of boundaries, you know, common sense boundaries, like, okay, you know, not right next to this pristine, clean water might be in order. So that's why, you know, so many people, we just, you know, got over 15,000 comments sent in to our elected leaders, to the Forest Service and the BLM, saying, listen, this is the wrong place to allow this kind of exploration to happen. I mean, right now, the law doesn't give enough sideboards for us to be able to have a voice going forward. So it's really time to, you know, before it gets going, really make a strong statement and say this area is worthy of protection.
Now, and is all the land proposed for exploration? It is federal land, and it is either BLM or Forest Service?
That's correct.
And so these letters, you sent how many letters altogether?
So far, it's 15,000. And, you know, that may sound like not a huge number. You know, you put a petition on the internet, maybe it gets a million hits. But we're talking about a relatively, you know, kind of small populated area. But the kind of people that are speaking up against this, you look down in California, all of the Curry County Board of Supervisors, the Del Norte County Board of Supervisors have come out very strongly against this proposal. You're seeing the local Rotary Clubs, all of these groups come together and really ask, you know, what can we do? What control do we have over the clean water that feeds our communities?
Have there been any discussions directly with Red Flat Nickel?
And that's the other tricky thing is, you know, I've talked to many people in the media who've said, you know, we've tried to call and get a statement. There's, I think, one phone number in the U.S., and then we have not been able to get any response from them directly, which is often what you see when, you know, a company has all the power on their side. You know, it's not really worth it for them to engage with the public.
And you had said strip mining or open pit mining. Are you sure that this is the method being talked about? I mean, how much do you know about the process? How much do they have to deliver to the federal agencies when they're describing their plans?
You've hit on a great point. We do not yet know. There's a lot that we don't know. That's one of the things that we don't know. You can look at other similar nickel mines in other areas just here. You can check out at home, if you want, the Google Earth imagery for the Nickel Mountain Mine at Riddle, Oregon. And it's been a decade and a half since Glenbrook Nickel closed that facility.
That's the one I was talking about.
It's still an open scar on the landscape. You know, the local community, you know, it was a boom and bust project where they came in, they developed the mine, the price of nickel dropped, and they were gone. And the community was left with this huge toxic site that has not been cleaned up. That's the other thing with the 1872 mining law is it often doesn't give, if it gives a bond, you know, kind of a insurance policy in case, you know, the price of nickel drops and the company can no longer stay, that bond is often very inadequate to actually covering the total costs of cleanup.
Grab your headphones. We have some calls for you. Let's go first to Wolfgang in Sunny Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Morgan Lindsay about a proposal to do some mining on streams in southwestern Oregon. Welcome, Wolfgang.
Hi there. Good morning. I don't know where to start because you were talking about mining laws and about subsurface rights. I think what's the most important thing is that the people need to be very, very informed that there are things, there are agencies. Agencies are lazy, but if you push them, they will do something. There are... English.
Thank you.
I'm a little out of place because...
All right, let's let Morgan...
Fastening a goat, huh?
Let's get a response from Morgan. Thanks for the call, Wolfgang. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Wolfgang. That's absolutely right. I think when I'm out in the Illinois Valley or down along the North Fork Smith, when I'm talking to people, overwhelmingly what I hear is, you know, how can I have a voice in this process? How am I able... to speak up to protect, you know, my public lands? And the answer is that we've got a really great process moving along. We've got a really strong coalition of ordinary citizens, citizens groups who are all coming together and putting pressure on the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management to take steps to withdraw these lands from the 1872 mining law. And so that's the path forward. And I think if people want to get involved, you can come check out our website, kswild.org, to learn more about what we're up to, see maps, and really find out more about the project for yourself. Thanks for the great question.
Does the federal government have the power that you're requesting to? I mean, do these agencies have the power to withdraw once there's already been a request to do some exploration for mining?
That's a good question. Yes, right now the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management both have the authority to withdraw these lands from the 1872 Mining Act. It does take an act of Congress, and so there's sort of two parallel pieces that will move together. But right now it's absolutely within their power. And I think, you know, I'm the first person to say that, you know, I understand the need for mining, but when you look at how many places around the world have already been developed, for example, this other mine up near Riddle, Oregon, you know, is that not that there's no longer nickel there? You know, it's already been exposed, it's already developed. There's a lot of kind of common sense things that I think could happen that don't happen in this boom and bust industry that's very driven by, you know, by prices that fluctuate very fluidly.
Let us take another call. Here's Chris in Redding. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking potential mining with Morgan Lindsay from KS Wild.
Yeah. My name's Chris, and I have no problem, you know, with the objections. And actually, I was listening and how you guys mentioned that, you know, you could petition and have Congress remove, you know, it from the mining law, you know, the what you guys are talking about. But I get upset when people start trashing the mining law. Because, you know, I love federal land and stuff and, you know, public lands. But the mining law, too, is in support of everybody because a quote from the pamphlet from BLM, it says, this law allows citizens of the United States the opportunity to explore or discover and purchase certain valuable mineral deposits on those federal lands that are open for mining claim, location, and patent. But my point is, it's like, I mean, you know, of course, don't want to trash the rivers, and I'm passionate about that, and keep public lands open, I'm passionate about that. But when people start trashing the law, the 1872 law, then I get passionate about that. So do you follow what I mean as my complaint?
So, Chris, you're saying that the mining law and we pristine rivers can coexist?
Oh, yeah, because the thing, the mining law is for all of us. You could go out and on the weekend locate some, I guess, some nice crystals and go back and go through the steps and process. But, you know, if people, I do agree, if people, like, are concerned about their drinking water, then, yeah, we should, like, you know, remove it from the, you know, from being mined. And, like, I mean, they did it in Trinity County. They're removing all the riverway, in the Trinity River, from any type of mining. So, I mean, I agree, yeah, it can all coexist, but, I mean, do you follow what I mean?
All right, yeah,
I mean,
thanks.
Mm-hmm. The law is very important for us, too, as citizens.
All right. Thanks for that, Chris. Appreciate it. So, you know, have there been cases where, for example, KS Wild has run across people seeking to use the 1872 mining law, and you come to some sort of agreement where they were able to do what they sought to do, and they still left the streams and the surrounding area intact?
Thanks for the question, Chris. I think it's very important to draw a clear distinction between the kind of small-scale, family-friendly gold panning that you could see people engaging in on the weekends and then the kind of large-scale, industrial, open-pit development that this company is proposing in one of the most botanically valuable and pristine areas of the lower 48 states, I think. You know, recently, Congressman DeFazio introduced legislation that would propose to revise the 1872 mining law. No one's proposing to get rid of it altogether, but to put some common sense sideboards on it so that, like every other country in the world, the U.S. government would get some royalties from what companies are able to profit from on public lands. So I think there's some really smart things that could be made to change the law. Like you mentioned, Jeffrey, it's proven to be remarkably resilient. And so in the meantime, the best option open to us really is mineral withdrawal. And identifying these lands right in our backyard as vital to the continued health and economy of Southern Oregon and Northern California, and really moving forward with the mineral withdrawal.
So what does that mean, no royalties? I mean, basically once a miner has set up shop on the land and has been able to patent the claim, they own it and there's no payment further to the government?
When you look at other countries and the way that they govern mineral rights, often there is, you know, there's some royalties. Okay, if this company discovers gold, they have to pay a certain percentage, just like, you know, we pay income tax. But in the United States, there are no royalties for minerals discovered and developed on public lands. I know, it kind of blows your mind, doesn't it?
It does. Is there any money that comes into the federal treasury up front? I mean, just paying for the mine claim staking in the first place, anything?
You know, that's a really great question. I have to admit, I'm not an expert on federal mining law, but I don't believe so.
Okay, but no royalties, certainly not on the loan. Let's take another call. Here is Peter in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Morgan Lindsay at KS Wild about proposals to mine in southwestern Oregon close to some critical streams. Go ahead, Peter.
Hey, unfortunately, I've missed most of the show, but I just wanted to comment that back in my home state of Colorado, unbeknownst to most people, all those beautiful rivers that run through the Colorado Rockies are contaminated with heavy metals as a result of mining in the 1800s, and obviously that's sort of a sad fact, and just wanted to share that.
All right, appreciate that. And yes, a lot of Colorado's history, obviously, in the 19th century about people coming to mining towns, a lot of boom and bust towns, ghost towns in Colorado that sprang up and were active places when mining was active and are ghost towns now because the mines played out and there was nothing left to do.
Thank you, Peter, for that comment. I think a lot of people have seen that happen to their communities, and it's really devastating when a company comes in, makes all kinds of promises, and then you know, either leaves without cleaning up the mess they made and really doesn't stay to take care of the community. So I think, you know, I'd be the first person to say that the Illinois Valley and this part of Southern Oregon could use some really secure, sustainable economic growth. And we're hoping to see that with protection. You know, there's already an incredible business and recreation. People come to Crater Lake. People go to the Redwood National Forest. You know, the development on the tributary to the North Fork Smith Baldface Creek would impact the water quality along the entire North Fork Smith River and including Redwood National Park. So we're really seeing a threat to the economy that's already really starting to take off in Southern Oregon.
While there may be ways in which the 1872 mining law trumps some other laws, you mentioned the fact that even within wilderness there can be some activity here. I have to believe, though, they have to comply with the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act. I mean, there must be environmental laws that, even though they're 100 years younger than the 1872 mining law, still apply.
That's a great question, Jeffrey. And I think so many of us rely on our bedrock environmental laws, you know, the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act. And what we've seen is that, especially with mining, it can be a real challenge to actually enforce those laws and make the companies really abide by those regulations.
It was just recently that you sent the 15,000 comments to the BLM and Forest Service. Is that right?
That's correct, but that's only the beginning. You know, this is one of those processes that can take some time. And so we're really looking to let more people know that this is happening, first of all. I think many longtime residents of Southern Oregon remember back in the early 1990s when there was a similar threat. And I think it was very smart of the communities in Northern California to say, listen, you know, we don't want this to happen again. We're taking steps to withdraw these lands from the 1872 mining law. And they did that. And so those lands are no longer eligible for mining. It's really time, it's past time to do the same thing in the Southern Illinois Valley and the Calmeopsis Wilderness.
Did you get any response from Forest Service and BLM? Do you have any idea when you might hear back from them?
That's a great question. We're looking ahead through the end of this year to maybe to get the process rolling. So the signs are encouraging, but it always takes a little bit of time to make it happen.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll hear more about this, the proposal to do at least some tests before there could be nickel mining on some key streams in southwestern Oregon. Morgan Lindsay is with the group KS Wild of the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center. Morgan Lindsay, thanks for joining us again on The Exchange.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
Good to have you here.